Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. I hope you're catching our show today live. Perhaps you're driving, you're riding the T, maybe you're at your kitchen table. The time right now is 3:34 p.m. But don't tune away if you're joining us in the 10 p.m. rebroadcast tonight or on our Radio Boston podcast tomorrow or on our website ever. Because for the rest of the show today, we're going to explore listening and hearing and how technology has changed our sense of time and space and how it's impacting what we listen to, when we listen to it, and how we experience sound. Joining me now live in studio is Damon Krakewski. He's the Cambridge-based musician known for Galaxy 500. He's out with a new book based on his podcast, Ways of Hearing. Damon, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, we want you in this conversation, too. How have your listening habits changed? Do you use earbuds, noise-canceling headphones? Do you miss the days of vinyl records, or are you excited by the ability to hear whatever you want, whenever you want it? You can call us. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. Damon, I want to start with the idea of your book, based on the podcast, that something has been lost as we've gone through this transition from analog sound to digital sound. What in your mind has gotten lost in that transition?
Well, of course, we've gained a lot, too. I mean, I don't want to ignore that, and I try not to in my work, because it's easy. I'm an older musician now. It's easy to get nostalgic for another time. So we've gained a whole lot. We've gained accessibility. We've gained there are a whole lot of barriers down to the distribution and to the production of music. You know, we all have our own studios now. And coming out of punk rock the way I do, that's great. I mean, DIY was where I started. So I'm all for that. But at the same time, I think a lot of what we've gained has come at a trade, a sacrifice, and we haven't necessarily been thinking clearly or naming what it is we're giving up.
So name a couple things you think we're giving up.
Well, I think for one, we're suffering in our cities, for one. I mean, we've lost a lot of stores. This isn't just music, obviously, but it's the switch from to an online world where, you know, Amazon dominates instead of your market. And, of course, record stores have disappeared largely. Fortunately, where I live in Cambridge, we have a few left that
and
I treasure.
There's a bit of a resurgence in vinyl and vinyl stores, isn't there?
There is, but it's so small in percentage for what the music industry is really about. To give an example from my own career, my first band, Galaxy 500, which doesn't work anymore, but we manage this catalog, you know, we'll sell a couple of hundred vinyl records a month.
Mm-hmm.
But we're getting 1.5 million streams on Spotify per month.
All right. So that's, that's just a huge difference.
Exactly. So the vinyl revival, I mean, so-called, it exists. But in terms of what the business is really about and in terms of how we're reaching our listeners, it doesn't really. So what's going on really is, you know, this shift to online. And I think what we're losing is ironically, a lot of information. This is a great irony to me about life online, which is, you know, a world swimming in information. But actually, if you take the example of music, think of an LP, for example. You have the front of the LP. Now, the front of the LP has made the transition online. You can see all the images of LPs and their artist and title. The back of the LP did not make the transition. The back of the LP disappeared.
So for our younger listeners, explain to them what would be on the back of the LP.
Well, everything that's not online, which is all the people that worked on the record. It's all the credits. It's all the musicians. It's all the producers. It's a long list of people. And what those people represent is a lot of labor. So really what we're missing is all the labor that went into the product.
Well, we're not missing it. We're just not getting it acknowledged. Is that
right? Exactly.
I mean, the labor still happened.
Well, some of it still does.
Okay. All right.
Because a lot of those people who contributed to records have actually lost their jobs. Recording studios have closed. Mastering studios are starting to close now because now there's software where it will automatically master program material for you. All these levels of expertise, even if you think, well, you don't need them because you've got software, again, I think that's a choice we're making without really thinking it through. Are we so sure we don't need recording engineers and mastering engineers? And how about drummers? I started on the drums, you know. There are not a lot of drummers on pop records these days.
It's a drum machine instead.
Absolutely. It's software, actually.
So this concept, I want to come back to the drum machine because we talked about this conceit of time and space at the beginning in our opening. That was a fascinating piece of the podcast and the book to me. I had not been invited to think about time as so my word, fungible, mm-hmm. as it was when you talked about it. And there was this, you talk in your first episode about how your band experienced something that's probably existed since choruses have existed. We've got a clip. Let's listen to that.
We played as steadily as we could, but this was a performance. We were nervous and excited, and we sped up at the chorus.
So you go on to compare that with a sound that really came into the scene in the 80s. And what made me think of it was when you mentioned that you were a drummer and, you know,
right.
So it was the drum machines. And you use the example of the 1992 Human League song, "Don't You Want Me, Baby." Did I? Yeah, 82. So your head's bobbing, everybody in the control room's head is bobbing, and yet you made an interesting case that we lost something in the kind of regularity of that drum machine mm-hmm. versus the speeding up excitement of the analog recording that you made with your band. So talk a little bit about that.
Right, and again, I want to hold back on making a value judgment about it, and here we all were enjoying the Human League, you know, because we're human. But there is a big difference in the time, the way time is used by machines, by computers, and the way we experience time in offline life, just regular. Just take your headphones off and look around you, and we all have this experience of time that we share. And time is really very flexible. This is the point I make in my book, in my podcast. And I know it from the drums, because when you play a song, you have this feeling with the other musicians, and you have a sense of time. It's not automatic, and it's not something you can point to that's universal or the same for everybody. Now, when you move to programs and software, you are dealing in standards that become necessarily the same for everybody. So there's a grid of time on recording programs that everybody uses now. And it's the same as a grid you might use in another type of software if you work visually in software or you make films or anything you do. You have that command like snap to grid. And musicians do the same thing. And producers do the same thing in the studio. They snap all the beats to the grid. Now, that makes sense for a machine, but it might not make so much sense for human beings, because time speeds up and slows down,
yeah.
you know, all the time. I mean, if you're paying close attention to something, time slows down. And if you're not, it goes by. You know, or people say, oh, time flies. All those cliches are because time is not rigid.
Because it does do that. Listeners, when was the time that a sound slowed down time for you? I can think of examples in my own life. Call in and share your thoughts with us. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. One of the other things that comes up is this idea that when we experience something live, we experience it one way versus when it's recorded. So right now, we're having a live conversation.
Right.
Somebody will listen to this later, too. Will they experience it differently because the element of real time is gone, even though they'll hear the same conversation?
Well, of course, they can't call in.
True.
Which is a great indication of the difference between live broadcast and podcast. Broadcast is different than podcast because broadcast happens in an instant for everybody listening. So we share... You and I are sharing a moment in here in an exchange, and then we're also sharing it with whoever's listening at this moment to WBUR. And that's very different than on-demand listening through Spotify, through podcasting, everything we do online. And if you think about it, really everything we do online, and you can extend this past sound, Facebook, et cetera, does not happen instantaneously. We don't share the moment together. We're staggering our moments, and we're using them at our convenience. But when you do that, you're not negotiating that moment with others.
Mm-hmm.
You're arranging it for your own schedule, for example. That's why it's so convenient.
So what's the downside of not having as many moments that we're negotiating? I like that word, negotiating the moment with others. What's the downside to that?
Well, I think we're losing skills at negotiating with one another. I mean, look at our politics right now. We are in a sort of crisis of communication and of not being able to accommodate one another. Everybody wants it the way they want it. I want my borders to end here at the end of me, you know, or the end of my block or the end of my wherever. And, you know, we're all in one world together, and that's a very natural human thing. But I think online exaggerates our ability to customize our world and maybe masks the reality that our world is not customizable. So, you know, it seems so, oh, I can order anything I want off Amazon any time. But think about what that the other side of that decision means. It means that when you go to the center of Harvard Square, there might be a lot of empty storefronts. And when you go into the stores, they probably don't have as good stock as they used to. And they might be failing soon, which also means that people aren't working in your neighborhood. And there's a whole lot of conclusions that come from those choices.
Effects. Yeah. Listeners, call in 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Do you prefer the hyper-customized world, or do you like the messiness of having to engage with it with other people? Jonathan from Somerville is calling. Jonathan, what's on your mind?
Hi, I was listening to you guys talk about time and the rigidity of time within machines, and I find that it's very important for me in movies that music and time be relative to the individual watching, that we use this music and we use the flexibility to make your time perception within a movie change.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Damon, react to that.
Oh, yeah. There's a fascinating documentary about movie scoring that I watched. This was back, and they had footage from scores being performed in the 50s and 60s. And it's very interesting because they actually have the orchestra in Hollywood live, and then they have the film up on the screen. And the conductor would look at the screen, not at the musicians. And that was because they needed to use flexible time. They couldn't use a regular time signature because they're hitting these moments in the film. And so you watch the conductor's arm, and it's going faster, slower, because the conductor has to flex with our perception of time in the film, which is very, very malleable. Now, of course, there are film soundtracks now that can be effective that are using machine time, but it is a different thing than acknowledging that sort of stretch that happens with emotional moments. I think because music is an emotional medium also, so it's underpinning the sort of flow of emotion and image.
Let's take more calls. We've got Peter from Worcester calling. Peter, tell us what you're thinking about.
Yeah, hi. I certainly identify with the loss of information, particularly when we buy music online. I buy a lot of jazz. I like to know who's in the band. I like to know who's playing. But I think the Amazonization, you know, Amazon model of taking over is the way of the world. The mom and pop corner store is gone. The supermarkets took it all over. And now we're just doing the same thing with the Amazons, the Home Depots, and on and on.
Yeah.
The way of the world. Thank
Peter,
you.
Peter, thanks for that way of the world thought. I want to take one more. Janet from Natick. Janet, tell us what's on your mind.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just got back from Montreal where we saw a video art piece by Ragnar Kjartansson. And he commissioned the band The National to play their song Sorrow, which is very rolling and elegiac, over and over and over again to a live audience. And the experience was absolutely transcendental to sit and listen to this music happen again and again and again. All of us were riveted that went to see it, some who knew the band and the song, some who didn't. And I think it parses this idea of what's authentic in music. What does it mean to make music? What does it mean to listen to it? How do you participate with the musicians?
Janet, thanks so much. That's terrific. And it helps get at something that it was also in the book and the podcast that I found quite striking around the authenticity of noise versus sound and the role that noise and sound can play. Maybe you could start by just clarifying for folks, what's the difference between sound and noise? Yeah,
right.
Start there.
Or signal and noise. And so sound would include both signal and noise. And actually, the wonderful segment you had before I came on about sounds in the ocean is exactly related to this. So the whales have their signals for one another and for listening to the signals of their prey, et cetera, in the ocean. But then the noise of the propellers and the machines that humans have put in the sea are masking that signal.
Now, so, in that case, though, we were talking about something that's harmful, but you actually talk about it as something that can be really beneficial to have the noise in with the signal.
Exactly. Well, it's funny because I was thinking about that. In the ocean, we have this problem of our noises are masking the signals for the animals. I think what we're facing right now is a loss of noise online. It's like your caller who just pointed out that his jazz listening is very poorly served online. Jazz is very badly served by streaming services like Spotify because they don't include a lot of what they've decided is extra information that attaches to the signal of the music. So someone has decided what is signal and what is noise. And in online life and digital life, it's very easy to eliminate the noise.
One of the sound segments that we pulled from your podcast, because we thought it was really interesting, it's got the Beach Boys' Brian Wilson explaining this from one of their recordings. Let's listen.
The tracks, the drums, and the way the guitars and pianos were mixed together, you couldn't tell. It's just one big sound, you know.
There was something profound about that.
Yeah, what Brian Wilson was doing was noticing that if you combined the signals of different instruments, you actually got a new sound. And what is combining when you do that are actually part of the harmonics of the instruments, what you might think of as the noise around them. But if you pay attention to that part of the sound, which we might label noise, when you pay attention, you transform noise into signal, because signal just means what you're paying attention to, and noise is what you're not. So in regular offline life, in a conversation like you and I are having, we're paying attention to one another, and so our voices are the signal. But then there are other extraneous things going around. Your producer's signaling to you, and when your producer makes a gesture to you, that becomes the signal rather than me, and I get pushed into noise and vice versa. And we're actually very skilled as humans at shifting our attention from signal to signal. Now, online, what happens is someone else decides for us what is signal and what is noise. So to go back to the jazz example, someone has reasonably decided, well, what do people need from jazz music on Spotify? Well, they need the music, you know. But in fact, maybe your listener who's a jazz fan wants to know who the bass player was. And that, to the person who decided what goes online, was noise. It was extraneous. So they cut it out.
We actually put together, you talk about Frank Sinatra in your podcast and in the book. So we put together a little montage of different versions of Frank Sinatra's All of Me. Let's listen to that for a sec.
All of me. Why not take all of me? Can't you see? I'm no good without you. All of me. Why not take all of me? Can't you see? I'm no good without you. All of me. Why not take all of me?
So I want to note, those were all digital versions of analog recordings. Right. We had the original, then we had a 78 RPM, and finally a digitally remastered version.
Yeah.
But you can hear the differences in sound across those. And somebody's making choices about signal and what comes through and what doesn't.
Absolutely. The other thing, to go back to our thing about time, you hear Sinatra stretching time. That's his incredible swing, you know, where he'll draw out all of me, and he pushes it past the bar where you expect him to stop. And that's what musicians do. They play with time. But yeah, the choice of what noises to cut away and what we're going to keep to focus on is something I think that we're actually all very good at. We can listen to those different recordings of Sinatra and each decide for ourselves.
Which one we like.
Now, when you go online, I think that those types of choices are actually narrowed. This is another one of these ironies of our online life, where our choices are dwindling rather than expanding. The internet, without the corporations that are mapping it out and selling it to us, is enormously expansive. There's an endless sea of information, to go back to your earlier segment. There's nothing but space and time and information. But what happens is, for the sake of efficiency and for our inexpensive services and our convenience, we start to shape it into these little compartments. And those compartments actually depend on cutting away all this other stuff. And that's the noise.
We have a caller who I think actually has something to say about this in particular. Chris in Brookline, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi there. Yeah, I was a recording studio engineer and producer for quite some time, sort of right at the end of the analog thing where we were still using tape and whatnot. But I couldn't agree with all of the stuff you've just recently been talking about in this last segment. Stuff is lost, and I love, what digital does in terms of expanding dynamic range and all that, but you're actually literally missing quite a bit of information, sonic information, at the sample rates we tend to use without getting too geeky. But also, you're right, the online streamers really need to up their quality level, I think. And we do miss a lot. We miss a lot literally in the music and the amount of music we hear because of sample rates that are too low. And also the other, helpful information, whether it's the liner notes or, the hum of a guitar amplifier in between a break or something. Those things really do mean something. And I love how clean and powerful our music can be with digital recording techniques now. But there's, there's something to the way we used to do it as well. And I wanted to chime in and support you guys on that.
Thanks for that, Chris. That makes me think there's so much about trade-offs here. I'm thinking about, there's a YouTube video about Charlie Puth, who's a current star. It talks about his methods for creating his hit song Attention. And what comes out is the fact that while we lose some things, the digital capacity that he had really allows him to be an artist. Let's listen to that.
I record instruments, I record shakers and pianos on here, and I put them directly into the session. That's the verse. And that just popped into my head, and it's so much easier for me to do that than write treble clef, E flat. I don't even honestly know how to do it.
So he's using his cell phone. He's using the internet. You know, right. That's actually about him using his iPhone to make his music.
Right.
So how can we really think deeply about these trade-offs?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what your caller Chris was making a great point about, we're hearing less. And when you record on your iPhone, there's a compression to the sound. And engineers call that lossy compression. L-O-S-S-Y.
Lossy.
Right.
Like, as in loss.
Exactly. Because that you lose information. You don't have to. You could use digital tools without losing information. But the decision has been made by umpteen hands that our tools pass through to permit this loss or encourage it for efficiency's sake, for cheapness, for convenience, for being able to use your iPhone as a recording studio. But there's a compromise. And we may not be fully aware of the compromise. A young musician who's using their iPhone may not be aware of the difference. And I just want to call people's attention to the choices that are being made. And I don't want to say, stop using your iPhone. I just want to say, try, hearing what a hi-fi sounds like with a record on it, because you might be surprised at the difference. And then you can go back to your iPhone and decide, no, but I want to do it this way. And, more power to you if that's your thing and that's how you create. But I think in a lot of our online life, we're making these choices, these sacrifices, without really realizing. Mostly because we're being sold on them.
That is Damon Krukowski. He's the Cambridge-based musician known for Galaxy 500. He is out with a new book based on his podcast, Ways of Hearing. He'll be at the Brookline Booksmith tonight. There's more information about the event, the book, the podcast at our website, radioboston.org. Damon, it's been a lot of fun to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
That is our show for today. Radio Boston is produced by Jamie Bologna, Zoe Mitchell, Chris Siderick, Paris Alston, and Walter Wuthman. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Tiziana Deering. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.